I'd like to speak this evening on slavery of the mind. Each time I come to speak to you, I too am a listener. For most people living in this world, slavery of the mind is a very real and pertinent thing. We all deplore slavery in the outer sense, in the human sense, and rightfully so. No person should be owned by any other person. And yet, we live in this condition of slavery. We live in a condition where the mind is controlled by the past, by the people who are in our lives, by a lack of self-control. And through that slavery, we set up a chain of events. That chain of events is described as the law of cause and effect, the law of karma. As a result of living in ignorance and then acting out of that ignorance and being a slave to the senses, a slave to the body, a slave to ignorance, we become filled with fear, anger, jealousy, shame. These become our new masters, and they are the ones who rule our lives. As a result, we are cut off from the source of our own native internal wisdom, intuitively divined through opening ourselves to the divine consciousness. Because the mind is so enslaved, we oftentimes do not even realize that we are slaves. We do not realize how bound we are. In the field of psychology, there was some tests that were done on college students. They were average students going to university in Stockholm, Sweden. And they took these students and they told them that they were going to put them into some simulated conditions. And they wanted to see how they would be affected by these conditions. And so they put them into a type of situation that might be faced by anyone who is taken hostage. They were put into isolation. They were given a reward system based on their cooperation. They were denied freedoms. And for a relatively short amount of time, for a few days, they were kept in this kind of situation. Within that few days, these students took on the mindset of people who had been held in captivity, sometimes for many years. As a matter of fact, they so identified with their captors and wanting to please their captors, they started making excuses for their captors and the misbehavior that their captors apparently displayed towards them. And that is called the Stockholm effect, when people who are held captive suddenly identify and start to defend the very system that is holding them captive. People who are slaves of the mind have that Stockholm effect. We begin to defend the very thing that is holding us captive. And if anything threatens it, we cling to it all the more tenaciously, not wanting to let it go. At least we lose the security, the comfort, the rules as we have been taught it. As a result of this, we don't even strive for freedom. We don't even strive to get out of the prison, out of slavery. Rather, we stay, and we stay with a resigned attitude, thinking that this must be all that there is. Down through the ages, the great spiritual masters, from Rama to Krishna to the Buddha to Jesus, to Muhammad, and so many others, they have come to awaken us, to tell us the truth of who and what we are. But the fact is that most humanity is sleeping and doesn't bother to be awakened. Like going into a teenager's room who has learned to sleep in late every morning and trying to rouse them up early. You have a real fight on your hands if you want to get them going. And so human beings are like that. People do not want to awaken. And oftentimes even those who say that they want to awaken don't really want to awaken, or at least they are of very mixed purpose. It is the rare individual who is motivated and feels the calling to become awakened within this lifetime. Most people are very happy to kind of stumble along in their lives, not wanting or willing to make the effort in order to arise, in order to be awake. We all suffer from the Stockholm effect. And we think that this world is not such a bad place, at least when it's going our way. And then when it's not going our way, we cry and we wail. But the moment the tide shifts and it goes our way again, we're happy to be on top once again. And so we take the bait. And once again, we're ensnared back into the world of duality. We who follow this path enjoy the rare privilege of having been taught the truth, and also that we have been taught the means by which to realize the truth of who and what we are. The intellectual imbibing of the words is the beginning of our path, but it is only when we take those words, those teachings, those principles that we have been taught, and put them into practice that we have really entered onto the path. Jesus said once, "Not all who say, 'Lord, Lord,' will I recognize, but only those who do the will of my Father." From that standpoint, the law is exacting, and we must be willing to pay the price. We must be willing to stand up and be counted. I have the great privilege of giving a Kriya initiation, tomorrow, start to head up to Prince Rupert, where there are some wonderful souls there who are waiting in anticipation for this initiation. Initiation is like a birth. It is the beginning of a great adventure for those who would take up the challenge, for those who are willing to apply what they have been taught and begin to change their lives as they demonstrate their openness towards this magnificent obsession that becomes our quest for God realization. A certain grace comes into their lives, begins to change the body, the mind, and the soul. It is only through the awakening of this grace that this transformation can take place. Otherwise, it is only a mental idea, it is only a conception arrived at in the mind itself. But if the mind continues on in slavery, then the work is yet to be done. In order to become completely free, we must surrender all that we call our own, our willingness to surrender it all. And as a result of that surrender, the cup becomes completely empty. Most people's cups, their cup of consciousness, is filled with the things of the senses, are filled with those activities, those ideas, things that we hope for, things that we desire for. And as a result of that, we leave no opening for grace to come in. In reality, grace is always pouring upon us. That is that transformative power that can take us from the human to the divine. We must first empty our cup in total surrender. Now, surrender does not mean defeat. And oftentimes in the English language, surrender is seen as something when you give up. It is true there is a sense of giving up. You're giving up your old way of being in the world. But it is not a defeatist type attitude. Rather, it is the recognition of the truth that there's a higher power and consciousness in operation in your life, in your own intelligence and human will, that is possible to consciously commune with that inner intelligence and power, and through an inward surrender, in other words, a feeling for what that intelligence and power is doing within you, and then a willingness to turn your life over to it and allow it to guide you and direct you, that the transformation can then begin. But not until then. As long as you think that you are controlling the ship, as long as you think this is your life, And it is yours to do with as you will. Certainly you have that free will to take that attitude. But as long as that attitude is intact, then no transformation will take place. There's a saying in the field of psychology that certain kind of psychological work is like trying to rearrange the chairs on the Titanic. The ship's going to go down. It is good to build this ego. It is good to feel positive about yourself, to do things in this world that fulfills the real nature for why you came. And there are very many aspects to that nature. Sometimes it can be to become good in business, to become good as a parent, to take up positive activities and create in that way. And so all of these things are good at a certain point of in our development. But we come to the point in time when it is no longer about developing this ego, but it is about surrendering it. It is about letting it go and inwardly attuning ourselves with the divine mind and consciousness. How do we begin this? By opening ourselves in faith and in prayerful mode to understand what the divine will is for us, and then to begin to enact that in our lives. For it to be divine will, it should have purity, a purity of purpose, leaves us clean feeling, uplifted, that lets us know that it is part of our transformation. It can be doing the things that we have always done, but perhaps with a new attitude. When our actions are derived from a desire to serve, we suddenly become a slave of the divine. But that slavery leads to freedom. There is an ultimate paradox in that. That when we surrender to God, that leads us to our freedom. When we surrender to the senses, that leads to bondage. So to see that God is moving in you, God is thinking in you, God is feeling in within you, even in this moment, as you feel, as you think, as you sense, to recognize and mentally affirm, that is God thinking in me, feeling in me, sensing in me. It is by the divine intelligence and force that all things happen, that I exist at all, as a physical entity, as a mental entity, as a spiritual entity. And through that constant recognition and mindfulness that it is divinity itself that is acting through you, you attune the mind, the body, and the soul to divinity. That superconscious state finds an entry point and can begin to manifest itself in you. The more you open that channel by that mental affirmation that all is the supreme acting in you, the more you will give free sway to that channel, the more you begin to surrender yourself to the impulses that come through your mind, through your feelings, through your intuition, the greater that channel opens even further. And so the purity begins to build. You feel the peace. You feel the bliss. You feel the sure inner guidance. Now this must be a whole and complete state that takes you over. It can't be a mental game that you play at your convenience. And you only do it when it's convenient to you, and if it's not convenient to you, you choose to ignore it. That will get you nowhere. The surrender must be whole, complete, taking no prisoners, as they say. And if you do this, if you enter into the supreme state of surrender, you will find that that consciousness will pick you up and transform you into a living image of the divine. This is not far-fetched. It is the message of all the prophets, all the saints, all the spiritual masters. They have said it in different words and in different ways in accordance with the customs of their day, with according to the language and the religion that they found themselves surrounded by so that they could relate to the people that they were speaking to. The message is the same. The message is the same. And it has always been. And it is there for those who would answer the calling. Each day, each moment is a challenge to us to inwardly open ourselves to the movement of the divine, to surrender ourselves to it, and then to be the witness of the transformation that occurs as a result. When you can stand forward and know that you are no longer a slave of the mind, but you are, if you will, a slave of God. There's a wonderful story. Swami Ramatirtha. Swami Ramatirtha, when he was a young boy, was sent by his father to a guru. And in those days, the guru was in charge of all training, all education. So you would get history, you would get mathematics, you would get every aspect of learning from that one. And you would get spiritual instruction as well. And so his father fully expected that his son would be educated by the guru, sent back home, where he would then marry, take on the family life. It didn't work out that way. Swami Ramatirtha was sent to a real guru, a living guru, one who had attained illumination. And he imparted more than book knowledge, imparted more than history and mathematics, but he imparted how to get soul contact, how to become God realized. As a result of that, as you might guess from the name, because the Swami is a renunciant, he did not return home to his father. Well, his father was very upset about this. And so he wrote several letters to his guru and said, "Send my boy home. I did not send him there to stay forever. I wanted him to get training and then to come back to me." Guru says, "What can I do? I tell the boy to go, but he won't go." Finally, Swami Ramatirtha wrote his father. He says, in the letter, "Your son has been sold as a slave to God, to Ram. And so he is no longer available or able to come back home." When you feel that you have taken on that slavery to the infinite, the infinite guides you, directs you, is your all and all and does everything for you. When you take on that kind of slavery, you become free. That kind of slavery is the one that we should strive for. But slavery of the mind to the senses, to the body, to ignorance, leads to more and more bondage. Divide up the world. Become clear in your mind. Use your reasoning, use your intuitive discrimination, and realize that which will lead you to freedom and that which leads you to slavery. You must do it, and you must be ruthless. If something stands in the way of your realization of your oneness with God, it must go. It must go. When it is clear what is in front of you, and you can divide up the path and say, this takes me to God, this takes me further away from God, you must choose. For each moment is a choice. And when you can proceed on down your path and there is no indication that it leads you anywhere but towards God, then stay with that. And if you make the wrong choice, it will become increasingly evident to you. You'll feel more ensnared, you will feel more enmeshed, you'll feel more forgetful of the divine presence. Gradually that ignorance will steal over you and there will be nothing left of the light. Learn to become sensitive to that discrimination. Use your reason, use your intuition. Become wise. For it is the wise one who will listen to their intuition, even if it destroys your world. You will listen to it and obey it and going according to that, because you know that in that you will find your freedom, and that it will be for the highest good of everyone. Swami Ram Dass was faced with a very difficult decision, because that decision came to him after he had taken on a wife and had a child. The calling came to him to leave that. What a difficult choice. He had a young girl. What was he to do? To him, he felt he had no choice. He had no choice. And so he took that path. Now, there are many who could find criticism, and understandably so, for making such a decision. And yet, because he made that decision, he received the full enlightenment that he was seeking for. It took many years, but eventually his wife came to live at the ashram and had great love for all the people there at the ashram. His daughter came to live at the ashram, and her two sons, who are great in God, were wonderful godmen. And so it just kept spreading out, the goodness, the light, and that is, as Mother said, a test for whether your intuition is true or not. Is it prophecy fulfilled? Was it for the highest good of everybody concerned? It produced difficulty for them, no doubt. But did it produce a greater good? And sometimes that's not always seen in the immediate moment. It takes a lens of time to back up and see it from a broader view. And then you can see, yes, indeed it did. It did fulfill the highest good of all. But in the moment, you can only go by your own intuition, by your own inner knowing, and go according to that. And it may destroy your life in an outer sense. It may destroy other people's lives. It's possible. And yet be fulfilling a higher good. How do you know? Because it is taking you closer to God. Because it is self-evident through your inner knowing. Because you are ruthlessly searching after the truth. And it has that hallmark of purity. It has no axe to grind. It has no motive based on the senses and the body and the ego. It comes purely from that wellspring of light and truth and balance that exists within your own being. We've been given a great gift, and that is to overtly, consciously, be able to seek out this path of realization. It is a great gift, but with it comes a great responsibility. Because we will judge ourselves at the end of this life, and we will determine, did we use the gift well? And the punishment will be our own bad feelings towards ourselves if we did not. And our own feeling that we missed the mark, that we wasted our time, that we didn't put our shoulder to the wheel and make progress when progress could be had. So now is the time. This is the place. And to make that determination with great clarity, to make that commitment within your soul, to do everything in your power to make that progress, not to be swayed this way or that. And if you do that, I will guarantee you, you will never look back and regret that decision. Seek that truth, and the truth shall set you free, as Jesus once said. What a great statement. What a great statement. And that's one of the hallmarks as to whether we know we're following the path of truth. Are we becoming free? Or are we becoming a slave of the mind? Are there any questions, thoughts about what I've spoken of or about your own spiritual path?
Like,
So when you say I surrender that, and then the feelings still remain, and how I equate forgiveness, you mentioned forgiveness, and surrender, that is letting go, an inward letting go. If somebody did something apparently against me, and I hold some bad feelings towards them, then I can't say that I have forgiven them, as long as I hold those bad feelings against them. I haven't forgiven. Forgiveness and surrender have to be more than words. So there's some place where I'm hanging on to that lack of surrender or that lack of forgiveness, some place where I'm not letting go. One of the things I can do is to analyze myself and ask myself, what is it that I'm hanging on to? Sometimes if we think that we are going to surrender something or forgive someone, we're saying what they did was all right, that it didn't matter. And that's an unfortunate association. We can hold a value. Let's say somebody lied to us about something. I feel very angry about that. And we have a hard time letting that go. And part of it may be, if I say, I forgive you, in other words, if I let it go, I'm saying it's all right that for you to lie. And so I can't find it in myself to say that it's all right for you to lie, because I don't feel that way. So we need then to divorce out the two notions. One is, I hold as a high value truth and truth telling. But I also understand that living in a human body and with a human ego, sometimes mistakes are made. And that some lie was told and it was a mistake, and I can let that go. I don't need to hold on to that any longer. Because if I'm holding on to anger about what somebody else did, who's doing the holding? I've got the anger. I'm punishing myself because I'm holding on to that anger. So to inwardly cut those strings, sometimes you can feel a string of energy, a tie of energy, a cord of energy that goes between you and that other person. You know it. You feel it in your body. And you ask yourself, am I ready, am I willing to cut that cord? And if you ask yourself and open yourself to the answer, don't just let the first answer off the top of your head, just let it go. Really open yourself to the answer. Let your deeper self answer. Sometimes it's no. No, I'm not ready to let that go. Then you say, why? Why am I afraid to let that go? Why am I resisting letting that go? It's holding me as a slave. It's holding me as a slave to this anger or this fear, whatever is going on inside of me. Well, it could be that I'm afraid if I let that go, I won't have any relationship to them anymore. It'll all be gone. They'll just go away. Well, if a relationship is only built on fear, what kind of relationship is that? Am I willing to risk and trust that there's something deeper going on there? And so I can cut that old way of being in fearful relationship with another person. And I let that go. You see, so we work down through the layers. We find out where that attachment is, why we're so resistant to letting it go. And as I've been speaking here, and we don't need to go into detail, but as I've been speaking here and you've been applying it to your own situation, can you see the places where you're resistant to letting it go? Why you would be resistant to letting it go? Yeah. And what if you are? What if you are and you let it go? Do you equate that with saying, and if I let it go, that means I'm saying I'm wrong and you're right, when I really don't feel that way? I really feel like I'm right in this situation. Can you allow them to have their own opinion, even if it's different and wrong? Yeah. And yet when we recognize that we're imprisoning ourselves through that, and oftentimes, this is really interesting, oftentimes when we hold an attitude like that with somebody else, they end up reacting to our attitude. And so the moment we drop that attachment, you don't have to see the world the way that I see it. They shift. It allows them to change. Actually, part of what's keeping them stuck is our own insistence that they change. Most of us don't like to change. It's hard to change even when we want to. And when somebody else is telling that we ought to change, that's really a formula for disaster. And so oftentimes when we're holding the attitude, whether we say it or not, they get it, they know it. You're wrong, you ought to change. Well, I'll show her I'm not going to change. I'm going to stay exactly how I am because she wants me to change. So we are actually part of a dance that keeps them stuck in the very place we don't want them. So when you say they are God's child, God gave them the right to have free will, to have their own mind, to have their own thoughts, to have their own beliefs, and he doesn't interfere with that. If somebody asks for help, God will move right in there. But if they don't, hands off. Nothing doing. Won't do anything to try to change them, just let it all play out. And when you really feel that God is at the center, in the heart of every person, then there is no fear. Because ultimately, there's only one place to return. Now, people may wander a very long time upon this earth, but they will still always return back home. And when we can allow people to be themselves and not be insistent on being different, oftentimes that gives them a sense that they can shift, they can change, and they'll actually become much closer to what we'd like them to be once we let go of our attachment that they should be different. Now, when we have children and they're very young, we both respect the fact that they are independent, autonomous souls in one sense, and in the other sense, it's our duty to help to train them and to teach them, and that's part of our duty as a parent. But when they become adult children, we begin to treat them more as adults. If they seek out our advice, fine, we can give it to them. But otherwise, increasingly as they get older and older, we let go. We let go. Everybody makes their choices. Everybody makes their own choices, and we allow them to do that. Lovingly, not disconnectedly, but lovingly, compassionately. Always seeing the best in them, always seeing the light in them. But as they grow into their adulthood, we treat them as adults. Our situation changes, our relationship with them changes, and we allow that to change and shift. And trust that God resides in their heart. And then when it's right, when the time is right, they'll turn to that same source of light that it took us so long to get in our own heads. How often, perhaps our own parents, or perhaps in past lifetimes, others had wished so much for us to be different, to change, and we were so stubborn and staying the way that we were. And when somebody has that stubbornness, to fight them oftentimes just increases their stubbornness, not the other way around. So realize the wisdom in that and to let it go. And then if God directs you to move in, to give some advice, to try something, then respond to that, but not out of your own need. It comes in steps. It comes gradually. But we begin to, what real surrender is the recognition that there is a divine intelligence and power that's running the show. Everything. It's keeping the walls of this house intact. It resides within the soul of each person who is here and every person that exists upon this earth. That we're not the doers. That we are an instrument of action. But there's something bigger operating in us. And when we come into full conscious recognition of that, that is true surrender. That's true humility. So it is wisdom that brings us finally to that point of full surrender, that we realize that this idea that we run the show, that I run my life, and therefore I need to run everybody else's life, is false. It's an illusion. It's harmful and it's negative. And that we, in our own wisdom, learn to identify what that divine consciousness is doing within us. We have to contact that divine consciousness, and that's what meditation is for, that's what chanting is for, that's what prayer is for. It's to awaken that divine consciousness, to open ourselves to the grace that's moving in us. So surrender does not generally come all in one moment, but it's a gradual, gradual letting go, recognizing the divine intelligence and power. There's only one that's operating throughout all the spheres of activity. And when we recognize that, then we can surrender ourselves to it. But you see, we have this false identity that says, I am the doer. And if I don't do it, it doesn't get done. And if I don't take care of this, then things will fall apart. People will not do what they're supposed to be doing, on and on and on. The problem is we put ourselves in God's position. And as a result, it makes for a very stressful life for us. Feels like we're carrying the weight of the world sometimes on your shoulders. Don't you just feel all that weight? It's all my responsibility. That's not how we're meant to live. Jesus says, put your burden on me. I will carry it for you, and your burden will be light. That is a sign that you are in divine communion with the inner Christ, the universal Christ, that you feel that your burden is light. And you may still be carrying a burden, but it feels light to you, because you're not the carrier. You're not the one who's bearing the burden. It is that divine intelligence and power within you that's carrying it. So anytime you feel that stress, you feel that pressure, you feel that crushing kind of feeling, transfer it over to God. Say, God, this is yours. It's not mine. I have falsely assumed this. You take it. You make me free. I'm a slave to all of this right now, and I don't want to be any longer. You take it from me. You assume this burden, and I willingly and gladly transfer it to you. And just, you can even see yourself just taking it off of your shoulders and giving it to God. What a relief that would be, wouldn't it? What a wonderful thing. Are you ignoring your responsibilities? No. Your one single responsibility is to attune your mind to God and to be as clear and perfect of an instrument as you can be for that divine intelligence and power. And as long as you're doing that, you are fulfilling your responsibility. And you don't have to be suffering in this life. You don't have to be being crushed under the burden. That is not leading a spiritual life. Sometimes, and especially in Christianity, it can be that if you're not suffering, something's wrong. That's not the case. It's not the case. But as Papa points out, if suffering comes to us, we take it calmly. If joy is there, we take it calmly. We take everything as coming from God. And then the burden is light. It is light. And we feel that joy and that inner guidance. So wisdom is the beginning of discrimination and saying, this is not what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm not supposed to be carrying my children's burden. I'm not supposed to be carrying other people's burden. My primary duty is to stay attuned to God within me. And then if He makes me of service to others, that will be His doing, not mine. And sometimes what is the harder thing to do is to stand back and not do the old role. Jump in there and be the way that you've always been. That's the harder thing to do. But it's the right thing to do. And then your kids say, Mom, how come you're not nagging me anymore? I kind of missed that. You say, I trust you. I trust you. I know that if it's right for you, you will ultimately do what's right. I trust you. I see the light in you. I see the goodness in you. And even if you make some mistakes, I think you'll fix them. Because I trust you. And I see God awakening Himself in you. Whether you use those exact words or not, that's what's going on in your own mind. But the message is, I always see the light in you. And even if I see you make the same mistake 1,000 times, I will never give that ultimate power. See, that's why gossip is so terrible. Because we give so much power to things that perhaps somebody is really struggling with. There's a saying that you may talk about other people's faults as long as it causes you pain. The moment it causes you any joy and lack of pain, stop right then. Because as long as it causes you pain, you have compassion for them. The moment you start getting a charge out of it, you're doing the wrong thing. So always see the light awakening within everybody. And even if there's 1,000 examples of how it doesn't happen, never give that the final authority. Never give that the final power. Always see that light as gradually, gradually awakening. Moving in that one, somehow, mysteriously, powerfully, sometimes by making the wrong decisions over and over again, and their lives becoming so painful that they just can't stand it anymore. But when they make that turn and go into the light, they'll never look back because they've had that experience. They know what that's like. And having experienced that, they want the light, they want the goodness. So in your mind, inwardly, mentally, never let go of the good. Never let go of the light within them. Always acknowledge that God's power is ultimate. And when God chooses to awaken Himself in that one, He will. When God chooses to awaken Himself in you, He will. So you, in your own ego, are not the final power either. You see, and when we give that to others, we give it to ourselves. And that is a wider opening for grace to come in and operate through us. Do you see how that works? You start to crack that hard shell of the ego. It always thinks that it's the one who's in control. And it's so subtle. We can think that we're being surrendered, and yet inwardly, we're not. We've just found a more clever way of trying to get around the game. That spiritual ego can feel so good and self-satisfied about itself. But it's just as lost. In fact, that can be, you know, the holier-than-thou crowd, or, you know, that can be worse than any atheist or any, you know, buddy just leading their lives and not caring about the spiritual at all. And so we have to be careful about that. What do we really know? What do we really know? How would we know how to guide somebody else's life? Tell them what to do? How to live their life? How would we have the audacity to assume that we would know with our puny little intellect in the human sense? How would we know? We cannot know. We cannot know. Only by contacting the divine and having that intuitive prompting come to us. And then it's not our idea, it's something that comes through us, not from us. And when you do that, and gradually you let go, you keep practicing letting go, the thought comes up, there's that thought again, I want to control this person, I want to tell them they're wrong, I want to tell them what to do, how to do it, let it go, get still within, get peaceful within. When I'm peaceful and I'm still and I feel that divine intelligence flowing through me, then I can let it work. Then I can let it work. But if I have a tendency to step in too quickly, let me have the opposite tendency of stepping in on the opposite side, very slowly. And I might have to bite my tongue until it's bleeding. But I do it, and I let it go. And just see what the effects are. See what happens to that other person. See with your own eyes, your own experience. Teach yourself about this divine intelligence flowing through you and what the power of surrender is. I had a coworker one time, and he used to get so angry with me because we'd have some meeting. Everybody would be offering opinions in this way and that way. She told me this years later. And toward the end of the meeting, I wouldn't say anything the whole time. And finally, some inner prompting would take me, and I would insert some kind of an opinion, and all the other discussion, it's as if the other discussion hadn't even happened. They said, okay, well, let's do that. And just off we all closed the meeting and off we went. And it made her so mad because she had argued so vigorously and so forcefully to have her point of view, and then just it's all swept aside. And I didn't even realize that kind of dynamic was going on, but she told me about it later. It used to make her so mad. And we all know people who just, they work so hard to get their opinions out there, but they somehow don't carry the day. And so when you listen inwardly and quietly, and then when you're moved to do something, then it has something behind it, something compelling. It comes from that deeper state of consciousness, and as a result of that, other people around you feel it. And if you're always like the gnat that's just buzzing around the head, around, people are just swatting to get it right, you know, get you away, you have no power behind it then. You don't persuade people. But if you wait and you listen and you act when that inner prompting comes, it comes from the power of God within you. And it will fulfill the purpose for which it was intended. And you may not even know what that purpose is. There may be no outward reactiveness to it. But something is being fulfilled. And if you feel the power of God flowing through you, just trust that divine will is being fulfilled. Not your will, not your little human will. You don't know. And other times you don't act, you don't say. And you think, oh, how does that help? Perhaps later on, like this person did years later, they come back to you and they say, you know, when you didn't say anything, that was the most powerful speech you ever gave. And sometimes that's true. Somebody is just a presence. And it changes the nature of the meeting. It changes the nature of how people get together, how decisions are made. And it's just the power of that presence. Do not underestimate that. And when you put yourself in alignment with that power, that is everything. And when you surrender to that, that's everything. Shall we have a closing prayer? O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of
Thy glorious presence,
surging in every cell of my being.
My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Peace.
Bliss.